In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. The winter months of 2019 and 2020 were the warmest on record for the contiguous United States, according to weather records dating back to 1894. It's a welcome relief from the artificially created polar vortex of previous winters. The warmer winter, however, was also an unnatural creation, according to the research at Geoengineering Watch. The jet stream moving from east to west across the Pacific Ocean and approaching the area near Washington, Oregon, and Northern California is diverted by climate engineering operations, such as spraying metallic nanoparticulates. Some of that spray act as a desiccant to dry up precipitation, but also microwave radiation fields are used to create high pressure. This high pressure effect will divert the jet stream away from the west coast of the United States and north toward Alaska. It then bends back down, and I'm not sure if this is from polar air or from the electromagnetic microwaves. Either way, it's moving the jet stream into the heart of the United States as far down as northern Mexico. The jet stream then picks up warmer air and moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. It then carries that warmer air from the Gulf up the eastern coastline, bringing record warmth for winter 2019-2020. If the sun broke through on any of those 60-degree February days, the temperature could have jumped into the mid-70s. Without going into the climate change psyop coupled with the UN Agenda 21, it's important to point out that the bulk of the weather control operations are conducted undercover in addition to national and international treaties. As mentioned on the show, activists properly reporting on this topic become targets of attacks. They include Bridget Conroy, Dr. Ilya Sandra Perlingeri, and Rosalind Peterson. Last year, anti-climate engineering activist Patrick Roddy was the victim of severe eviction tactics at his San Francisco apartment following a change in building ownership. During this time, it was reported he fell to the ground, hit his head, and subsequently suffered several strokes that left him permanently disabled. He was taken to a psych ward against his will and on false pretense. Patrick used his own savings to report and publish research about the ongoing climate engineering operations. He collected evidence for an epidemiological study linking heavy days of aerosol spraying to local mortalities. That information was on his computers that were stolen in addition to most of his belongings. He posted an update in May of last year on YouTube. He seems to be doing better. There's a link on inothernewsradio.com if you want to learn more about what happened to Patrick Roddy. We go now to hear a past interview with Patrick. Well, you've been active in the anti-geoengineering movement for a number of years. Although awareness on this issue is starting to increase, there are still many who don't see the aerosol operations, the grid patterns, the X's up there in the sky. How did you first find out this was going on? What was your epiphany?
Well, I've been active in a number of things like, you know, Building 7, 9/11, vaccines, all kinds of stuff. In those circles, this is one of the other things that are discussed. And for me, it was the one thing that was covert, and no one was talking about it in mainstream. And it's just a completely taboo subject. It is as covert as the Manhattan Project was, but it's huge in plain view everywhere on the planet on a daily basis. And it's, but the thing is, when you talk about when you talk about people not being aware. No, they're not. I mean, it's unfortunately still a minority. But everyone you talk to has recognized that the skies are not what they used to be. They know it's wrong. They just, the powers that be have somehow got the idea that, oh, it's just a vapor trail, nothing to worry about, carry on. But when people say it's a vapor trail, I say, yes, yes, it is a vapor trail. It's an artificially nucleated vapor trail because water vapor does not condense by itself. It needs something to condense onto. It can be a bit of pollen, dust, cosmic rays, because those are particles. even other bits of water, but it won't condense by itself. So when you have high solar activity, the cloud cover increases. So the concern is, what are these aerosols? What are these particles that are being laid down by these planes all over the place? If you look at the patents and the white papers and all the discussions and people's own observations, I test my rainwater and it's really high in aluminum, barium and strontium. Those are highly toxic. It is no coincidence, I believe, that Alzheimer's has gone from nothing to the sixth leading cause of death since the early 90s. In 92, Alzheimer's first appeared in the top 10 in the CDC mortality statistics for people 65 and older. Now it's the sixth leading cause of death. But more concerning is respiratory failure. Respiratory failure is basically when you die when your lungs stop working. That overtook stroke to be the third leading cause of death back in 2011. And this is at a time when smoking was at an all-time low. The factories are in China, they're closing down power plants, cars have better emissions, and people are supposedly healthier. So why are they dying of lung failure? But I recently got back from Paris. There was a big climate conference there, the last conference before the IPCC meets this November, December, to do the big climate confab. That'll be in Paris as well. And they've been trying hard to include geoengineering in the international agreement. But when I got to the conference, they were really dialing it back. They were quite almost afraid to mention it. They couldn't mention it in the main plenary session. This character, Ken Caldera, who we'll mention later on, he flew in from California, and that's all he talks about. It's like, oh, well, we need to put sulfur in the sky to save us all from global warming because we're all going to die. In his 1 hour panel discussion on solutions for climate change, he didn't mention geoengineering once. And the only discussion there was at the entire week-long conference was off-site in a small room, which is hard to find. And then he just briefly skimmed over it in like 20 minutes without taking questions. So I don't think they're going to get it in the December declaration, but they definitely want to get it in at some point. And
Patrick, let me stop you there just so I can review some of the things that you just brought up here, because there's a lot of information for someone just learning about this issue and those who know about this but aren't familiar with how there's an international framework of agreement. What is the point of bringing in geoengineering into these international climate conferences? Why does it have to happen? Because it's happening in real time, but they're saying it, they're proposing this, and it's a fallback, a last resort. What's going on here with that? Can you explain that?
Well, first of all, this, they call it geoengineering, climate modification. Well, actually, there's two parts to geoengineering. One is carbon capture, where they supposedly suck carbon out of the atmosphere and bury it underground and think it won't bubble up like a soda stream. I don't know why, but anyway. And the second one is solar radiation management, preventing sunlight reaching the planet's surface to reduce global warming, reflecting sunlight back out into space. And when they talk about this, they only mention sulfates. They won't say, sometimes they'll say sulfuric acid. They won't talk about all the other things that they say are more effective. In fact, David Keith, who's another one of the cheerleaders for geoengineering, he wrote a paper back in 2010, The Photophoretic Levitation of Geoengineering Particles or some such. And in it, he said sulfates are ineffective because they coagulate and they fall out of the sky and they're the wrong shape and they don't reflect right. And what you really need to use is nanoparticulate aluminum, barium, and ferrite. And those are the things that we're finding in our rainwater all over the world. It's not just here. In fact, where I live in San Francisco, and we get prevailing winds off the Pacific Ocean. So I have 7,000 miles of clear ocean. I have some houses between me and the beach, but that there's no way that a little bit of residential activity is going to produce the very high levels of aluminum and barium that I'm finding in my rainwater. There is a very well-funded and organized opposition to people getting the word out about geoengineering, because it's a big covert program, costs a lot of money, and they need to keep a lid on it. And these, and you'll have people like, when people first hear about it, and then they post something on Facebook, oh hey, what are these lines in the sky? You can guarantee within a matter of minutes they'll be called crazy people by all these random Facebook characters. I mean, you see the same thing anytime someone criticizes GMOs or whatever Israel's up to. There are well-funded, organized shills, really. It's just a fact of life. But for people hearing this and they start talking about it on social media, and they get this pushback and think, wow, oh, I must be the minority. That is very unrepresentative of the public at large. I speak to people constantly. Year on year, it's the awareness is at least doubling, you know. And I think we're getting to the point where awareness of GMOs was about 4 years ago.
It's encouraging, Patrick. I agree. But why is it important, getting back to the question about bringing geoengineering into this international framework, why do you think it's so important, especially as it's happening in real time? Why can't they just continue these operations and not worry about what anyone says, because it seems to not matter anyway?
It's becoming so very blatant. People are noticing. And they have to come out at some point and say why their people's skies have changed. And they do tie it in with this whole climate thing. And the fear of global warming has abated over, you know, the last 16 years when it's been getting colder. So they're sort of raising on a busted flush. So they have a limited amount of time to be able to say, oh, we're spraying you to save you from global warming. And that's the only excuse they have for the spraying. And it's bogus, because it's quite simple. I mean, if they are, first of all, they're putting these little particles in the sky which attract moisture and basically form clouds. Clouds are insulators. Cloudy nights are warmer, clear days are warmer, and the reverse is true. It's just the insulating layer. It has no net effect on the temperature. And it's simple physics, like, you know, a four-year-old knows that. Plus, why we know that excuse is bogus is because if their goal was to, you know, have reflective particles bouncing light back into space to reduce global warming, they would find the most reflective particle and just use that. But as anyone who's been paying attention can see, they're spraying all kinds of stuff up there because it behaves differently. You'll see trails that will drip. You'll see ones that expand rapidly. You have these little twisty ones that sort of fade out in about 3 minutes. You have ones which will stay in place and weird wispy stuff will come off the side. There's so many different types, which means they're different materials, which means that is that line that, oh, it's just for solar radiation management, is bogus. So I'm not very fond of just sticking to the term geoengineering or climate engineering, because they're spraying different things for different purposes, and it is affecting the health of not just of humans, plants and insects. I mean, you got bees with Alzheimer's now. Actually, seriously, it's ridiculous. There is a biological component to it, so I just call it chemtrails. And in fact, the U.S. Air Force called them chemtrails. If there was a U.S. Air Force Academy document called Chemtrails, which was talking about this, and you know, and also the Air Force produced this working paper called "Owning the Weather by 2025," where they talk about weather warfare and how to, you know, spraying all this crap. So it's just keeping it in terms of climate. That's why they have to tie it in with the climate thing, because if the true reason for it, when I don't even know what the true reason for it is, I mean, maybe there is some benign purpose and it's unfortunate that it just happens to kill a whole bunch of people, but the greater good might be some other fantastic thing. I don't know. But it's still covert. They were, I don't know who's doing it. I don't know why, but I know what, where, and when.
You're a photographer, and you have a physics background and journalism. And tell us what you found regarding sun dogs and the chemicals in the atmosphere.
Okay, so I live in San Francisco, and I got this great little camera. It's a Canon Vixia Mini, which has a super wide-angle lens. And I point it south and have it take pictures every 5 seconds. And each night I'll put together a time lapse, which is like a video of, you know, speeded up of, you know, what was going on in the sky that day. And I got hundreds of them on my YouTube channel. There's this phenomenon called the incredibly rare sun dog, which is basically a ring around the sun. If you look closely, well, actually, when you look directly at it, it's hard to see. When you take a picture with your phone, you can see it a little more clearly. It has the ring, the perimeter of the ring, there's a little tiny rainbow. So it's called a halo or a sun dog or incredibly rare sun dog. This has started to become commonplace over the last year or two. I mean, I've been doing these time lapses for, well, the last few years at least, but only recently have started to see these. So water, all transparent material has a refractive index, which means how much light is bent when it's passed through it. And the refractive index of water is 1.33. And the refractive index of ice is 1.31. A vacuum is 1. So basically, water and ice has the same refractive index, how much it bends light. And that creates what the rainbows we used to see, you know, which you'll see when you look at a rainbow, you'll see about half a circle. But these sun dogs, you can see the entire ring. Like a regular rainbow has a 42-degree angle. These sun dogs have a 21 degrees radius. And that means to create one of these circles, you'll need something with a double the refractive index, about 1.6, 1.7. And barium sulfate has the perfect match. It's 1.6 something. Back in March and April of this year, I had this period in my time lapses. There's a 30-day period where I counted 21 of these incredibly rare sun dogs in a 30-day period. And it rained briefly on one of the days, and I collected the rain, sent it to two different labs. And it came back with hardly any aluminum. It was only like 5 parts per micrograms per liter of aluminum, but it came back 160 micrograms per liter of barium. Barium is highly toxic. Less than 1 gram can kill an adult human. And they're talking about, you know, spraying, you know, like 500 million tons or some crazy amount in the skies each year. And this corresponds with the increase in respiratory failure in people keeling over. I mean, if you look up the material safety data sheet for barium, it's nightmarish. It shuts down every single organ in the body, because what it does, it interferes with the potassium uptake at the cellular level, and that puts your muscles into spasm, and your heart stops, and you die. So it's not pleasant. I mean, you know, not to say that aluminum's great, because people are getting Alzheimer's in their 20s now, and that's all documented.
I heard also that barium increases aggression. So there's no shortage of evidence on this topic, as a lot of the researchers know. But here we are, barium with the refractive index, barium showing up in the rainwater, also aluminum and strontium. Many of the researchers and the people who are tuned into this, where do you think the barium is coming from?
Well, they mine it or something. You know, barium's not that expensive. You know, but what is expensive? I mean, each plane costs a couple hundred million. You know, this is not a cheap program. So the material costs for the aluminum and barium and whatever the stuff they're spraying is a minor part of it. And in any case, the people behind it aren't paying for it. You know, like back in 2008, when the entire planet got looted, like all that money didn't go to money heaven. That went somewhere, and I'm sure a lot of it's, you know, going towards this this covert program and other illegal stuff they're up to. We are ruled by a mob. of sociopaths, and they never pay for stuff unless they can, if they can't figure out a way of getting us to pay for it somehow.
Fluoridating the drinking water is another very interesting example where toxic waste from the phosphate fertilizer industry, sodium fluoride, is put into drinking water systems in cities throughout the country and throughout the world. Our bodies are used to filter this. It is a very expensive waste product to dispose of. Humans are filtering it through their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, okay, we talked briefly about passenger jets being involved with aerosol operations, the spraying of these chemicals in the skies, leaving these grid patterns and including the sun and many other aspects to it. But you were talking about the increase in the cost of flying related to us paying for some of these operations.
Well, more specifically, about 10 years ago, maybe less, the airlines really restricted or charged a whole lot extra for people who wanted to check bags or check extra bags. So people are bringing less baggage onto planes. The planes are the same size. They have the same number of seats. But they're using less baggage space, and that's freeing up extra space for perhaps tanks of stuff that they're spraying. I don't know. But for the time lapses, I have a super wide camera. But I also have a camera with an insane zoom on it. It's like a 24 to 2,000 millimeter zoom. So I can actually get close-ups on the sprayers as they come over. And you can identify these planes because there's a app called Flight Radar 24, and you can point it at where the planes are, and it'll identify, oh, this is such and such. And the planes that are spraying, I mean, over my apartment, like, are from China and Korea. You know, this is a global thing, and it's not just the unmarked ones. And going back to the unmarked ones, when you have like severe spray days, and there's like crap loads of planes everywhere, and there's this grid pattern. Those aren't passenger jets. And I suspect that most of them are drones, because why bother with pilots? Because pilots can get drunk and blab to their mistresses, and you don't have that problem with drones. And it's easier to compartmentalize. And I suppose we should also mention how tight a lid has been kept on this program.
It's more, yes, I agree. It's more secret than aliens and UFOs.
And I don't even know anything about, maybe the UFOs and stuff exist or not, but the Manhattan Project, when they were building the bomb, they had, back in World War II, there was over 100,000 scientists, plus however many people, contractors and support people, building that thing over several years. Nobody talked about that. I mean, maybe privately amongst a few people, but it didn't get out until, the Japanese found out about it, when it landed on them. So you can keep massive projects under wraps, and people will say, this is a time of Twitter and, it's so much easier to get information out. Yeah, but it's also much easier to keep track of everyone you know who's involved. And, if they're making any calls to journalists or whatever, those people are tightly, tightly monitored. I mean, it's the same model as, in 1984. The inner party kept a very close watch on the outer party and didn't really care much about the proles. The people who are actually involved, they have the eye of Sauron on them at all times, and they must have been told or let known to them that if anyone speaks out, bad things will happen. And as a result, there's been no one's spoken out about this, really. You got to give them credit. I mean, that is an impressive job. But I can speak out. No one's hired me. So you'd think, yeah, this is a really bad, it's a depressing subject because, all these people are, premature death and all that kind of stuff. But I love fighting these scumbags. There's hardly any decision involved in it at all because they're so cartoonishly evil. I mean, they're worse than any James Bond villain. They're the same people who will start wars and, poison the food and all that kind of stuff. And they're just straight up evil. So it's a no-brainer that you got to, do everything you can to stop them. And it's not, an impossible thing. Because again, look at GMOs. You know, when people were first talking about GMOs, you know, oh, you're crazy, and they got attacked, and they were just some, you know, like loons in the wilderness. But now it's mainstream that, you know, people think twice whether they want to eat GMO or not, and if they can afford to, they'll choose organic.
Can you talk about the United Nations agenda for the 21st century connection to geoengineering?
Well, Agenda 21, which was signed by President Bush Sr. at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, when you talk about Agenda 21, people say, oh, you're crazy, that doesn't exist, it never, you know, shut up. But what that really wants to do, I mean, there's a... To explain Agenda 21, you need to go back to the 30s, unfortunately, because in the 1930s, there was this crackpot movement called the Technocracy Movement. They thought, well, people are too stupid to choose how they are governed, so you need to get rid of representative government borders, have the people be ruled by experts, technocrats, which you're hearing about in Europe. Most of the prime ministers and stuff are technocrats. A lot of them are just appointed. They also wanted to get rid of currency completely and get rid of, like, you know, supply and demand and replace that with energy credits. And this is back in the 1930s. Of course, to do that, you need to have a comprehensive, up-to-date inventory of all human activity and resources. And you couldn't do that before high-speed computing and the internet. Now you can. Hence, you look at your smart meter. By the way, if you hear the word smart or sustainable, that's Agenda 21. So they got sort of booed off the public stage back in the 30s. But Zbigniew Brzezinski, who later became Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, wrote this book in 1970 called Between Two Ages, America in the Technotronic Age, where he basically rehashed the technocracy agenda, you know, ruled by experts, basically the philosopher king's idea from Plato. And David Rockefeller loved it. And on the basis of that, he formed the Trilateral Commission. He and Zbigniew Brzezinski were the two founding members of the Trilateral Commission. And then they brought in, you know, Kissinger and all those other characters. And when Carter got elected in 76, he was a nobody before that, but he was a trilateralist. And he stacked his entire government with like 30-odd trilateralists. Out of that came Agenda 21 and all this monitoring and tracking. Because, I mean, the whole spying on our phone calls and stuff is not about fighting terrorism. It's all about monitoring us because we are human resources and you need to have complete understanding and tracking of everything. So that all ties into it. So, and how geoengineering ties into that? Going back to particles forming, you know, being condensation nuclei. For rain to fall, it starts off with like a bit of dust or whatever, and water will attract to it, and eventually it'll grow large enough that it'll gravity will take over, and it'll fall out of suspension and come down as rain, hail, snow, whatever. But if you completely saturate the sky with a crap load of these particles, and I should also mention that 500, you know, tens of millions of tons, nanoparticles are very freaking small. The 5 nanometer particles that David Keith talks about, you can get a million of them in a grain of salt. So multiply that by, you know, a few hundred, you know, tens of millions of tons, you have a lot of particles. But basically, when you spray all these particles in there into the sky, there's not enough moisture in the air. To get the particles up to the size, or the droplets up to the size where gravity will take over. It acts like a big sponge. And every time there's been a storm front approaching the California coast, and you can go on NASA's website, they actually have satellite imagery day by day, they spray the living crap out of every storm front coming in, and that's why California's in a drought.
I'm glad you said that, Patrick. It's a very good illustration. You described it very, very well. Yes, we often talk about the the spraying operations being used as a desiccant.
Oh, absolutely. But also, you can, by screwing with the weather, it isn't getting warmer. So that's making it harder for them to sell the whole carbon tax thing. So they've switched their thing to extreme weather, like tornadoes and storms and all that kind of stuff. And it's quite easy to create storms and floods and all kinds of stuff. The RAF got, I mean, there's declassified stuff from the RAF flooding out Lynmouth back in the 50s. You don't screw around with the climate and not have losers. Well, you maybe have some winners, but you certainly have more losers. And it's, it's all quite simple physics. They've been doing it forever. I mean, the earliest patents date back to 1920. There's a long, long history of weather modification. But the controlling of the water supply is a very old military tactic. You know, if you were invading some, you know, if back in the Middle Ages, you wanted to take some castle, instead of like trying to break down the walls, you just dam up the river that supplies the castle and they die of thirst. I mean, you know, and, you know, of course, no, and you can, I mean, if you control water, you control food and you control people.
Our guest is Patrick Roddy. He's an anti-geoengineering activist and journalist. We'll be right back after this break. If you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Patrick Roddy about bringing awareness to the massive operations of spraying the atmosphere with particulates, the human health impacts of that, and what we can do to stop it. And sometimes we often talk about the vitamin D aspect and the lack of photosynthesis. So when you mess with the sky, you mess with the weather, it's really everything.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I mean, of course, when I brought the paper to, you know, the climate thing, I just spoke about human health impacts because I was an easy sell, really, because people don't want their children to die, you know. But yeah, it's affecting everything. And the fact that respiratory failure is the third leading cause of death and overtaking stroke, when you breathe these nanoparticles in, they go straight through your blood-brain barrier. They can get into your circulatory system. And particulate pollution causes heart attack and stroke. So the heart attack and stroke numbers should be going up, but even with those, respiratory failure has even overtaken stroke. So it's a massive, 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 you know, devastation of health. And, you know, there's a very well-organized opposition to this, you know, to getting the truth out. So if you go, if you expect Greenpeace to do anything about it, dream on. Greenpeace, oh, I should also mention, back when we were talking about the governance of this, one of the discussions they're having at these climate meetings is, well, if country A wants to do geoengineering, country B right beside them doesn't, who decides whether it happens or not? And they say, yeah, we need an international, a governance setup for that. And and as a result, there is actually an organization called the Solar Radiation Management Governance Initiative, and their job is to figure out international agreement on this. And it's also a sly excuse for another reason we should have global governance, which I think is a bad idea. And even if we had like angels running it, you know, who's going to replace them? But Greenpeace. Greenpeace gets funding from the Gates Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, and other foundations. Gates and Carnegie publicly fund geoengineering research, and they're quite open about it. And then back in March of this year, Greenpeace UK put out a press release thing saying, hey, people, stop sending us pictures of chemtrails. It's an urban myth. You're imagining things. That's just water vapor. Please stop sending us this stuff. You're a bunch of loons, right? Okay. But if you go to the Solar Radiation Management Governance Initiative.org, it's those initials .org, click on partners, sustaining partners, go down to G. Oh, Greenpeace. They're a member of the governance initiative for geoengineering, but it's an urban myth. You know, unfortunately, a lot of it ties back to the Club of Rome. The Club of Rome wrote back in The Limits of Growth, I believe, back, and I forget exactly when it was written, maybe in the 80s or 70s, that in searching for a common enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, global warming, famine, and the like would fit the bill. Therefore, the common enemy of man is man himself. And I would actually interpret that as the common enemy of the scumbags is man himself. And this is nothing new, because if you read Plato's Republic, you know, where the philosopher kings came from, Plato was writing in that back then, oh, there was too many ancient Greeks. He was complaining about overpopulation then. Because when you have the ability to control pyramidal structures of power, which they pretty much do, they've got it all locked up, you know, finance, governments, military, pharmaceutical, energy, ecclesia, education, everything, health. You can have a very small number of people controlling a vast amount of infrastructure and, you know, our day-to-day stuff. But they've always had a problem with the fact that we outnumber them a bazillion to one. They've always been uncomfortable about that. So that's why we've had so many wars. You know, there's ways of getting, you know, getting rid of, you know, the restless natives, so the useless eaters. And this is just the 21st century version of it. But I'm an unwilling slave. You know, I do not agree. I'm not going to sort of throw myself on the altar of Gaia for some, you know, clearly total scam, really. Again, going back to the green movement, these essential message you'll find from Greenpeace, Sierra Club, PETA, all of those is, oh, there's too many humans. You should feel ashamed for breathing. You should eat bugs. And the worst thing you could possibly do is have children. And then, you know, at the same time, we find that every single chemical that is introduced into our environment happens to be an estrogen mimicker, you know, endocrine disruptor. I mean, we were talking earlier, atrazine, which I found out about this in February at the AAS conference in San Jose.
Spell it and tell us what that chemical is used for.
So atrazine, A-T-R-I-Z-I-N-E, is a pesticide that's been in use since the 50s. This is before Roundup, Monsanto's Roundup. And I forget, maybe Dow made it, I forget who it was. And that is still in use on crops in the United States. I think it's banned in Europe. But this researcher from Berkeley was studying what this stuff does, and it is frightening. The other chemicals like phthalates and PCBs and BPA and all these other things are estrogen mimickers. They're synthetic estrogen, and that's, you know, reduce, you know, male fertility, and, you know, girls are having their periods when they're like 4 and 5 years old. And but atrazine, what it does, it doesn't mimic estrogen. When it encounters testosterone, it converts it to estrogen, and it turns boy frogs into girl frogs. And every time there's a new thing, introduced. Like we find out 15, 20 years later, oh, yeah, it's actually an estrogen mimicker. I mean, there was another one. There was this a detergent that is used in the last wash of clothes that are manufactured abroad before they're shipped out to be, you know, end up in, you know, in Walmart or Banana Republic or whatever. And this detergent, I'm not even sure it even has any detergent properties, but it's 20 or 100 times more potent than bisphenol A as a synthetic estrogen. We are basically under chemical warfare from all angles. You know, the frequencies they chose for Wi-Fi and smart meters interferes with sperm production. You've heard about Echo Science. A lot of people haven't. This book written by John P. Holdren. So John P. Holdren is another one of these, you know, people who think, oh yeah, we've got to get rid of 90% of the population. And he wrote this book back in the 70s called Eco Science. And in it, he proposes, well, you know, we need to depopulate, and it's easy enough to do in the third world. You can do it with famines and wars and such. But in the first world, the US and, you know, Japan and Western Europe, it's harder to do that. So what we should do is surreptitiously put sterilants in the food, air, and the water, and vaccines. Sure enough, we have them. But what I found out recently, there's actually a section in Echo Science. You've heard of stevia? It's a sweetener. When people don't want to use aspartame, let the healthy, trendy Whole Foods ways get stevia, right? Get a PDF of Echo Science and do a word search for stevia, because he says in this book that another thing we could use is this herb that they use in Peru for birth control called stevia. It sterilizes you. When you have stevia, you're fertile for like a month or two or something. Every damn thing. They're depopulating. They are basically depopulating.
Patrick, you've been really active in attending a lot of these conferences, these climate conferences, mm-hmm. and you've been running into an old friend, Ken.
My buddy, my BFF,
Ken Caldera, and. He, I don't know if he still is, but he was the scientist with the Department of Global Ecology, Carnegie Institution of Washington at Stanford University.
He's still there.
He's still there. Okay, so I had, in 2006, I was at an event where a number of geoengineering scientists had convened and spoke about the potential of, using weather control. Ken Caldera was there. We had a nice conversation, and in that conversation he said, I used to work at Lawrence Livermore Lab, where we all participated in a meeting where we sat around the room thinking of ways to manipulate geophysical systems to use it as a weapon. That means, could you somehow interfere with the Earth's functioning in a way that you could use it as a military weapon? Could you change climate? What could you do to manipulate the Earth's physical system? Some of the ideas were, could we blow up hydrogen bombs underwater or offshore to make a tidal wave or tsunami that would go over a city? The result was, isn't it easier just to drop the bomb on the city? And then he said, now you could imagine putting pathogens in a cloud. Let the cloud go over somewhere and rain down on your enemy. Do chemical or germ warfare. That may work on something as big as the former Soviet Union, where you could be pretty sure that in a few days, that cloud would rain out. Why did that impact you so much?
Well, first of all, here's a guy who's out saying, oh yeah, we want to spray this stuff in your sky to save you from global warming. But, oh, by the way, in the past, you know, I was talked about, you know, putting pathogens in the clouds. So, and, you know, doing chemical and germ warfare. And I think you should actually roll that clip, because the banality of the way he says it is very chilling. Especially when he says, we thought, yeah, wouldn't it be just easier to drop the H-bomb on the city? You know, and he says it so casually, as if he's like deciding which burrito to buy. You know, it was just, woof. And this is a mass murder at work. And yes, he doesn't fly the planes, I know, but he is one of the three guys who drew the short straw to go out there and sell this. And he is culpable.
Okay, Patrick, let's roll that clip. Plans to leverage the powerful forces of nature have been on the table in think tanks for years, says physicist Ken Caldera. He's a senior scientist with the Department of Global Ecology at Stanford University.
I used to work at Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and I once participated in a meeting where we all sat around the room and thought about how could we manipulate geophysical systems to use it as a weapon. The meeting was about weaponizing geophysical interventions. That means, you know, could you somehow interfere in Earth functioning in a way that you could use it as a military weapon? Could you change climate? What could you do in terms of manipulating the sort of Earth's physical systems to as a weapon? Well, you know, some of the ideas were okay, we could blow up hydrogen bombs, you know, underwater, offshore, and make a tidal wave that would go over a city. And, you know, the result was, well, isn't it easier just to drop the hydrogen bombs on the city? You know, that there, now you could imagine, though, say, putting pathogens in a cloud, let the cloud, you know, go over somewhere and then would rain down on your enemy and create, you know, do chemical or germ warfare in this kind of way. And that might work against something that would say as big as the former Soviet Union, where, you know, you could be pretty sure that within a few days that cloud would rain out.
Well, there it is. You know, there's a lot of other great audio of you confronting Ken Caldera at various events. Can you set up some of these clips for our listeners?
Actually, the video where I compiled all three confrontations, I mean, the first one was at Berkeley, where I busted him at first, and he freaked out, and he wasn't quite, you know, basically dodges the question. And on the third time, he told me to F off. Interestingly, when I posted that video online, it got picked up all over the place. It was on Activist Post. DavidIke.com picked it up. It has like ridiculous amounts of shares all over Facebook, and YouTube stalled my counter. They froze it for 48 hours. And so I actually caught them in the act of real-time censorship. Because what I did was, like, when I noticed the counter had frozen, I asked commenters, oh, by the way, when you come in here, say what the counter is and what time you saw it. And it stayed that way for 2 days. So they were very uncomfortable about that going viral.
Let's roll that clip.
Basically, the American population accepted kidnapping and torture and accepted all these NSA knowing where we are and where we communicate all the time. And I think if the government announced, you know, that, we're putting diamonds in the sky to protect you from climate change, and we've been doing that for the last decade, you know, I think that people would largely accept it. So I think this idea that people are going to refuse, you know, be up in arms about this, If they weren't up in arms about the Bush administration revelations, you know, I feel that the population will accept anything.
If you wanted to make money.
So you said you're committed to truth,
yeah.
Right? When we last spoke, actually, no, two times back in Berkeley,
yeah.
And I played you the recording of your interview,
right.
When you said that you were in a meeting at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories discussing how to weaponize...
No, not how to. I think...
No, no, oh, so you, so, wait, oh, wait, wait, so you do remember it then?
No, no, what I remember there was a discussion, but you had... Have you ever sat in a meeting and discussed weaponization of climate alteration?
So you do remember...
No, 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 I'm asking
you remember our discussion?
Answer my question first. Have you ever sat in a meeting and discussed whether it would be possible to weaponize any kind of environmental alteration?
Not at a weapons lab.
No, no. I'm asking you, did you ever sit in a meeting and discuss whether it would be possible to weaponize any kind of environmental alteration?
I have discussed... I've discussed the U.S. Air Force's document,
okay.
With, you know, owning weather by 2025.
Do you remember the second half of what I said? I know that you type...
but so you now remember this. You now remember now. This is good. Okay.
That,
no, you had no knowledge
okay,
before.
Look, I'm, no, that's, you know,
continue,
why
please.
Don't you shut the f*** up, okay? Because you know, I'm saying this, because you don't let me talk. I know you're recording.
That was some audio from your video confronting Ken Caldera at a number of climate engineering events around the world, around the country. Ken Caldera will probably never say anything like that. This was back in 2006 when he said this to me about putting pathogens in a cloud. He is correct in saying that he sat around with other people in a room saying, we talked about it, we didn't implement it, or he didn't say they implemented it. Why are you cornering him on this specific thing?
Well, because he is proposing putting some mystery meat hamburger helper in our skies, which is already happening. You know, he's already talked in the past about using this as, you know, in terms of warfare and pathogens and, you know, chemical and germ warfare. So, and the context of when he said, I mean, we could sit around a table. I mean, he said, well, oh, haven't you ever talked about, you know, those sort of things? Well, not when I was on the payroll at a weapons lab.
Yeah. I was wondering why he asked that. And he also said, remember how torture became normalized? Remember how surveillance normalized? Well, this is the same thing with geoengineering.
Mm-hmm. The Dead Kennedys song, I Am the Owl, which talks about spooks, there's a lyric in there which I think is appropriate. And it says, in 10 years or so, we'll leak the truth, but by then it's only so much paper. And they're counting on the majority of people to think, oh yeah, that's just another thing, you know, which we've just screwed and just move on with it. But where he is massively wrong is throughout human history, the people who have prevailed have been a determined minority. We've been ruled by a determined minority since we climbed out of the mud. We don't need the 90% of the population. We need like the 2-3% who are just really ticked off about this. I mean, I'm just some guy. You know, I've made them feel rather uncomfortable. You know, it didn't even cost me that much. You know, I just go to these things and say, oh, hey, what about this thing you said? And just talk to people. It's easy to do, and it's actually rather enjoyable. So they are terrified of being, you know, the lights shine back on them. Both Caldera and Keith and the other ones are looking rather nervous. And again, back to Brzezinski, he was talking about the global awakening in his last book. You know, people like, oh crap, they're onto us. Pay attention and call them on this stuff. And I'm not okay with torture and wiretapping. You know, he can speak for himself.
It was very telling where he was with all of this when he said that. It was shocking. So,
and hubristic.
Yes, hubristic. And you're doing good work, Patrick. I really appreciate you being on the show. Can you tell listeners where you're off to this week?
Oh, yeah. Actually, tonight I'm actually catching a 6 a.m. flight to Washington, D.C., so on the 11th of August, Tuesday, the EPA is holding a hearing on aircraft pollution. I mean, I don't know who how that slipped through, but there's a bunch of us who'll be there saying, hey, stop spraying us, basically. And I'll be representing the data that I brought to the Paris conference about, yeah, here's the evidence that's going on, and this is the devastating health impacts that it's having, and EPA, do your job. Because the EPA stopped testing for airborne aluminum back in 2002, conveniently. So I want to present like a verbal freedom of information request, like show us the data for that. I don't know. We'll see how much play it gets, but I think they're definitely regretting it. I think how they thought they were going to get out of it, avoid the whole, you know, a geoengineering issue of it, was they're restricting it to the greenhouse gas emissions from aircraft. So when someone says, oh, they're spraying stuff, and they'll say, oh, no, that's not greenhouse gas, we'll ignore that testimony. Unfortunately for them, carbon dioxide is a negligible greenhouse gas. Water vapor is like 95% of our greenhouse gas. Clouds, you know, cloudy night, it's warmer, cloudy day, it's cooler. So they'll have to address this. You know, I can try. You know, you do little things here and there, but for people listening to this, just talk to your neighbors. Just talk to people on the bus. You know, when there's a bad spray day, go out there and, like, you know, be obvious about taking pictures and just talk to people and just get the word out. Because the way you cannot rely on organizations, groups, or leaders to save you. The cavalry isn't showing up. You're the cavalry. And we have to do this ourselves. And it may seem, you know, and don't get discouraged by someone who thinks, oh, no, it's just water vapor. Because when you do find someone who knows about it, it'll encourage you to speak to 10 more people. And, you know, and once that happens, I mean, it is already happening, frankly. I mean, the awareness of this is just, you know, skyrocketing. And the geoengineers, and again, when I say geoengineers, it's not just about climate. The guys who are behind the spraying are... they don't like the fact that people are onto them. And we can all help that. So, yeah. So that's what I do.
I think you're right, Patrick. And if listeners want to reach out to you or read your articles, how do they do that?
So I have a website, stopsprayingus-sf.com. But if you just look up my name, Patrick Roddy, R-O-D-D-I-E, you can find me. I mean, I'm active on Facebook and YouTube and not so much Twitter. Oh, actually, the Twitter thing, I should chip in here. So as I was going to Paris, I tweeted to Ken Caldera's Twitter account, oh, here's some light reading for the conference. And I get the paper there, which is the human health impacts of geoengineering solutions. There was dead silence from him. I kept retweeting that and, like, reminding him, have you seen the what do you think of the paper? And I actually met him twice at the conference, and he's learned his lesson not to talk to me. He's just turned his back and walked away. And the only response that I've had from him was there was one of the shield groups, Kaku, where, like, had this profanity laden tweet. And he favorited that. And that's the closest he's gotten to, saying anything about it. And the other geoengineer who was at Paris, Alan Robach, he's out of New York. I gave him the paper. It came up to me later. Unfortunately, I wasn't recording when he came up. And his criticism of the paper was he didn't like the font.
Patrick, I want to thank you for being on the show. You've been going strong, and it's refreshing to know that you're taking the lead out there in San Francisco on the anti-geoengineering front. So thank you so much for being on Another News.
Thanks for having me. I mean, the more people know about this, the quicker we'll finish it.
That was a past interview with former climate engineering activist Patrick Roddy, who is recovering from a series of attacks and several strokes. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.